Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome to the broadcast. It is Monday, June 17th. My goodness. And we are so excited to have you be with us. And we have got a special guest, Renee Rodriguez, CEO of Valentum, who spoke at the Mastermind 2013 conference a couple weeks ago in Las Vegas. And I got a chance to sit down with Renee and asked him to come to the broadcast. What an interesting guy to talk to. What a fascinating individual. Great perspective, and I am really excited to have him on the broadcast. He also used to work with Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor, so we're going to get a chance to connect at many levels here. We're excited to have you be a part of the broadcast. Special thank you goes out to our sponsors who are a part and make this the part of this broadcast and make it all so special and possible. Special thank you goes out to United Guarantee, a la mode. And if, by the way, those of you that are interested in becoming sponsors on the broadcast, get a hold of me. Email me. I look forward to hearing from you. As we are adding more and more to the broadcast, we're excited to have you be a part of it. So a special thank you goes out to our sponsors. Also, a thank you goes out to you, our thousands upon thousands of listeners who are telling others about the broadcast each and every week. We're here for you as a public service. Again, this is the first of its kind broadcast. It's produced by mortgage professionals, for mortgage professionals, and we're thrilled to have been awarded the Innovation Award of 2013 by Progress in Lending, folks. Appreciate it. Joe Farr, let's get into the regular part of our broadcast, folks. Each week we bring you a segment called the Market Update. Joe Farr is with us.
Hey, good morning, Dave.
Hear what's going on today, Joe. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, it's been a fairly quiet morning, especially compared to what it was last week. Right now, MBS prices are down a couple 30 seconds on the day, but they've just stayed in a very narrow range so far. This morning, the New York Empire State Index came out. It was a good deal stronger than expected, and sometimes that could move the market lower, but it didn't have much of an effect. The Dow's up 160 or so, and you know, all this is in anticipation of Wednesday's Fed meeting. I believe the expectations are growing for a little more accommodative Fed than what was maybe beginning to be felt last week, early last week. And Dave, last week it was all about the Fed. It was way more volatile last week, but the net effect of all the movement was a favorable movement. We ended the week about 75 basis points higher for the week. And, you know, that's going to create a lot of confusion. I hope people out there that have customers that read the Freddie Mac survey understand that survey is really a dated survey. By the time it comes out, it's 4 or 5 days old. The data is collected on Monday, maybe Tuesday, and when you have big movements late in the week like we've had, by the time it comes out on Thursday and they read about it, things can be terribly different. So this is one of those weeks to the good side. You're not going to have to explain why your rate's better than what or moved in a better direction than what the Freddie Mac survey did. But just know that's kind of a dated survey by the time it comes out.
Good reminder.
So good week last week, because we've had a number of bad ones preceding this. And the economic data that came out last week really had very little effect on things, mixed results. The retail sales, which was the biggest of the announcements, was essentially on target. Jobless claims were a little better than expected, but industrial production and consumer sentiment were a little worse. So it's and PPI, core PPI anyway, showed a very tame level of inflation at only 1.6% on the year. So not a big effect on prices. But what did affect the prices was all the discussion about the Fed and the shift in sentiment from will they be more or less accommodative? When will they start stopping the taper? Right. And a new thing's come into the discussion this week, and it began to be, when are they going to raise the Fed funds rate? Some people were beginning to believe that it might come a little sooner than what was previously expected. And a lot of the markets are indicating a raise in short-term rates in the not-too-distant future. And that was causing MBS prices to fall. But then late in the week, it was kind of interesting, just a blog post, but it was by a guy that's a very well-known Fed watcher, wrote an article that said that it's John Hilsenrath, reminded people that hey, the Fed has said that they're not going to raise the Fed funds rate until considerably long after the end of the bond buying program. So, you know, we have all that to go through first. It was just kind of a slap in the face to the market to say, hey, wake up, this is what they've said. And there was an immediate reaction to that article, and it carried that was Thursday afternoon late, and it carried over into Friday. So, but all that said, all eyes are on the Fed. There's not there's a lot of people. Everyone has opinions as to what the Fed's going to do. They differ considerably, and it's because of that, I think whatever they do, it's going to be a market-moving event. So the meeting starts tomorrow. The announcement, their statements read at 2 o'clock on Wednesday, and then the press conference follows at 2:30. So be watching at that time. There's going to be a significant reaction one way or the other, I believe.
Yep.
Later in the week, there's a little economic news, but really the focus for this week has got to be on the Fed and what they say, what hints that they provide for what they might do in the future, when they might do it, and not only regarding the bond purchase program and the taper, but their commitment to long-term accommodation on the short end.
Well, there is going to be – the Feds are going to be the area to keep our eyes focused on, is what you're saying. And any chance of anything coming out of the Asia or the European markets, anything that you anticipate there?
Japan, there's a G8 summit going on now. Japan could do something following the G8 summit. What they announced not too long ago, their new accommodative the easing program that they announced, had a positive impact when it was first announced. Subsequently, it's kind of turned around on them. Their long-term rates have gone up as opposed to going down like ours did, and their stock market, once after the rally, has come back. So you don't know what they're going to do, and they might use this G8 summit that's going on now as a reason to announce something soon thereafter. So. Dave, you never know where the market-moving news is going to come from these days.
You never can tell, but if you have a service like MBS QuoteLine, you can at least be responding to it because you publish, Joe, some of the most timely, accurate, up-to-the-minute, concise information out there. And we really appreciate you taking time out of your week your whole team focusing on bringing us this report, folks. You got to get this service. To learn more about it, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS QuoteLine can eliminate these frustrations. MBS QuoteLine monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS QuoteLine, you'll never be out of touch with the market,
whether you're in the office or on the road.
See for yourself what MBS QuoteLine can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteLine.com to start a risk-free two-week trial.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin'.
Good to have you with us each and every week. We're looking to see if Paul Morrow is going to dial in. Just shot him a quick note, but while we're waiting for Paul to dial in, and he's so busy with following all the story that's going on there, it's quite interesting. Hopefully we'll have him on here in a little bit. But let's talk with Alice Alvey to get the legislative update. Alice, good to have you back on. We had to listen to you recorded last week, but that was good, very helpful, but we just love listening to you live. So what do you have for us today?
Well, you know, we're back to the laundry list of legislation just because, you know, now that all the proposed rule comment periods have passed, you know, there's more to pay attention to on the legislative side. But one thing I will say, the CFPB has developed a new webpage that has all the regulations in place, and they have little audio programs you can watch now with a PowerPoint slide. And the very first thing they say basically leads you to believe you cannot use anything we say in these presentations. They are not legal advice. Well, wait a minute.
Wow.
If I can't take what you say and implement it, then where am I going? So it's kind of interesting that they have a little disclaimer ahead of each one of the little presentations. But definitely helpful for people to kind of say, all right, here it is all in one place, and be able to get the CFPB overview on it. So go ahead and make sure you check that out. I'm sure you all have it saved in your favorites. All right. On the bill side, we do have that House Bill 2379 was introduced just today to try and amend the SAFE Act. You know, we've had this going on at different state levels and at the federal level in the past to say, if I'm a new loan officer, or I shouldn't say new, if I'm a loan officer moving from a bank to being a mortgage originator at a lender, I lose some time in there, right? I've got to go take a class. I've got to go pass a test. And why shouldn't I be able to have some continuity of income in that process? So this is a bill that would allow a little bit of a window in there so that they can be able to have kind of a grace period to get a 90-day transition period in those types of scenarios. The actual wording of the bill isn't available as of, you know, a half hour ago, but we'll keep watching it for you. So I think this has a better chance right now. In the past, we didn't have loan originator registrations for the banks anytime this bill came up before. Now that we do, we're only talking about education and testing, so maybe it's got a better chance than it did in the past. We're also looking to watch some bills that are related to Fannie and Freddie. So we've got a few out there. We've got, let's see, I'm kind of jumping around here. We've got the House Bill, Senate Bill 563, where Corker is talking about the Jumpstart GSE Reform Act. We've also got Senate Bill 1048, Mortgage Financing Act of 2013. Both are trying to go after a solution for solving Fannie and Freddie. When that actually gets more legs, I'm sure we'll have a few shows about it, right, Dave? We'll talk about the future of Fannie and Freddie, right? So in the meantime, I'll just watch those to see if they get anywhere. We've also got House Bill 2167 that actually passed the House last Friday. It's the Reverse Mortgage Stabilization Act. We do see a lot of movement to try and give FHA more authority on reverse mortgages to try and slow down the defaults. More and more reverse mortgage homeowners are taking that full lump sum. Those delinquencies are higher, and FHA wants some authority to be able to say, you need an escrow account. We've got to have some better money management going on with these lump sum distributions right up front. So there are several components to even potentially even having to look at the financial situation of the customer. So a little heads up for those of you who work with reverse mortgages, it does look like FHA is going to get some new authority to change those. Let's see. We also have House Bill 1077. Which this is the Consumer Mortgage Choice Act. The bill will hopefully try and exclude loan-level pricing adjustments, affiliate title fees and escrow charges. You know, we're looking for some changes in what's in the 3% for a qualified mortgage. This bill, actually, there's going to be a hearing on it, and so we're hoping that we can get some more leverage to help reduce the impact of that 3% calculation. That would be great. So we will watch that one very closely. A hearing at least shows that there's some movement on it. So right now, Dave, that's the crux of my report, and I'm going to turn it back to you.
Well, there is so much going on, and there's enough activity going on through the House and Senate. Do you any sense that this is beginning to subside? If you're tracking this all the time, and I'm trying to stay up with it as much as we can, but I know our listeners are going, is there any evidence based on what's the bills that are forming in the House and the Senate, House or the Senate. Is there anything there that would indicate that they kind of get that maybe they're overburdening the industry and they're starting to slow some of this down?
Well, I guess it's hard to say. You see that there's the attempts, you know, from the senators that get it, that are getting pushed back from, you know, their constituents,
right.
And, you know, but in terms of actually getting something to turn the corner, you know, it's hard to tell that there would ever be anything that unwinds Dodd-Frank at this point. I think everybody just needs to accept it's here. I think the points and fees test is a reality because it really is going to change how we work with loans, because so many may not be a qualified mortgage just simply because of that test. And they don't want to be hurting lower loan amount borrowers, potentially low income borrowers. So hopefully bills like that will get some legs that actually anything that starts to push too hard on the change in home ownership, we're hoping they're paying attention to more. Dave Stevens was on CNBC this morning talking a little bit
about that.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I haven't had a chance to watch that clip yet, but he sent out that notice on Facebook and an email out to everybody. So it's really important to kind of stay tuned. David's doing a great job of being a voice for the industry to try to get this thing headed in the right direction. Interesting comments about his housing bubble. Are we in a bubble? And there were some really interesting comments. So if you are not connected with David Stevens on Facebook, you should be. He's got some great stuff. Alice, appreciate you taking the time to out of your busy day to bring us a quick report. And, again, you had that big, exciting announcement here a week ago. You are now a part of Indicom. How exciting.
Yes, it's very exciting. We are very happy to now be Indicom Mortgage U, and we will be offering wider services for our training, be able to reach more people with the wonderful technology and support that they're bringing. So it's a great match of talent and services, and we're very excited.
Well, we're excited to see what you guys are going to be coming out with next. There's so much to do. They made a wise investment buying your company. Very smart investment. They did well. They did well.
Thank you. We think so, too.
Well, to learn more about Mortgage U, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break with Renee Rodriguez. Coming right up after the break is Tony Garitano, then the Profit Doctor. And I always love getting those two together because we always get so much perspective, so much to do with technology and how the finances and how our profits are intermingling. It's really interesting. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lincoln.
Tony Garitano, appreciate you taking time to dial in and give us an update and answer questions. We've always got questions, Tony, with you regarding what's going on in the world of technology, and certainly that area is getting more and more attention. So it's good to have you on the broadcast, Tony.
Thank you for having me, Dave. And I do have to say up front that I have been suffering from a little bit of a head cold, so if I sound nasally,
that's the reason. I got a cold in my dough that I can't talk very well. I got that. Heard it. Well, anyway,
great for the radio.
Well, we appreciate you taking time when you're not feeling well, especially. Thank you so much. Hey, by the way, Tony, why should lenders and services look to e-recordings? Is that really starting to come together?
You know, Dave, I really had not heard very much about e-recording in the past few months, but then I got this announcement from National Title Clearing this morning, and they're reporting that in May of 2012, 10% of their volume was e-recorded. And now they're saying that's up to 45%. And, you know, in
really?
A little over a year, I mean, that really stunned me that it's their volume of electronically recorded items has gone up so significantly inside of
that
the last year.
That does surprise me. That's kind of snuck up on us, a little bit of a surprise for all of us, I think. That, well, what return on investment, this is actually a profit doctor question, but what return on investment can lenders and services expect to get from e-recordings? Then we're going to get the profit doctor to jump in.
Sure. I mean, what NTS says initially, and then we can debate it, but what NTS is saying is that they are seeing a substantial reduction in the length of time that it takes to send, record, and return documents. They're seeing less potential for investor penalties or delays. They're saving with postage. They're seeing a decrease in staff hours spent following up and tracking paper documents. They're seeing increased security and efficiency because the documents are now being tracked through the entire process as opposed to in silos. And the original documents, they never leave the submitter's possession. So if there is a legal action or if there is any kind of need to get those documents, you don't have to go to Iron Mountain anymore. They're there with you all the time.
Profit doctor, that's got to help us on the bottom line a little bit here. We're looking for squeezing some more savings out of somewhere. Your thoughts?
Well, yeah, of course. Anytime you can increase efficiency, reduce staff time, it means they can do more with less. So that's always a financial benefit. But for some of this, I'd kick it back to Alice, because what's the reliability? What's the accuracy? Is it done right? Are we
going to
end up with worse foreclosure issues? So my caution light started going on when Tony was talking about this, and I see the financial upside. It's easy to understand the financial upside. I'd have a regulatory compliance and a reliability concern of this.
Alice?
Well, I don't know. Usually with electronic, though, you end up where you can get rid of some of the human error, right? So, I think that's one of the things that we usually see as an advantage when you start to get good technology in place.
And in my case, David,
Tony,
I've heard several, to address the foreclosure issue, I've heard that there were several cases where the lender could not produce key documents, and therefore the borrower was given the home free of charge, and
mm-hmm.
the mortgage was basically voided, which obviously doesn't happen when you operate in an electronic world and you have an electronically recorded instrument as well. So I would argue the opposite, that it is a little bit more secure.
Thoughts, Andy?
Well, that's another topic. I've got a counter to that, but we're getting way off topic for today.
Well, the point of it is it's up. The recordings are up. They are in possession of it, so I get that. We may have to get into that. That's going to be a good discussion. We're doing a series of broadcasts on production and loan originations now, but that may be something when we circle back into the operational components. So we're going to bookmark that.
Well, the short of it is that people followed MERS, did MERS the way they thought they were supposed to do it, but then when it came down to some of the judicial states, they still wanted to see production of essential original documents, which under some of the MERS design wasn't intended to be required. So I think there's everything was done, MERS did what they're supposed to do, but still there were some judges wanted something else. And so we just need to just think about the fat tails is all. What could happen the low probability events.
Well, the fact that they're holding on to the documents, that they keep them and have them retained, that seems to be a real advantage. So that'll be an interesting discussion. Tony, thanks so much for bringing this to our attention. Yeah. Thanks, Tony, for bringing it to our attention. And a 45% increase. Wow.
Yeah, in just a year. That's a lot. I was really shocked by that.
That is really important. We appreciate it. Tony, thanks so much for being a part of the broadcast. Have a great week. And, folks, if you want to learn more about Progress in Lending, you head out to their website, www.progressinlending.com. If you want to get a hold of Tony, it's tony@progressinlending.com, or his phone number is 203-529-3131. By the way, it's a great place to advertise if you want to get out in front of some of these real good leaders in the industry. Great place. Tony, thanks so much. And I was thrilled to see you have Phil Hall writing for you. He is a good writer. I love it.
He is. He's a great guy, wonderful writer. We've added a bunch of new writers. We have Lou Sickleman, Scott Kersner, George Jasek, Phil Hall, James Comtois, and there may be a few more writers coming in the future.
Well, good. Well, you're growing. It's so good. Congratulations on your success, Tony. Appreciate it. Let's go to the prophet. You betcha, Tony. Let's go over to the prophet doctor and get his perspective on things. You know what? There's so much, Annie, that we're looking to. I'm looking for anything encouraging, like the e-recording, anything we can do to begin to, you know, help, you know, the other aspects, which seems to be getting more expensive to operate a mortgage company these days. What Alice is doing and reporting on is adding a horrific amount of cost to the bid process. It's always interesting. So what tips do you have for improving the bottom line?
Well, it's always great to have ways to improve the bottom line, and having operational efficiencies is a great place to go. Having fewer staff hours devoted to the production time of turning a loan from an application into a loan and sold to an investor is always the right thing to do. That kind of focus is essential. But sometimes we end up making things more difficult than I think we need to at the same time. It's kind of like the the other day I thought I'd bake a cake, so I go get the cake mix, and I start looking in the pantry, and I got to find some flour, and it's like, well, where's the flour? I can't find the flour. So I said, all right, fine. What's next? So baking soda. You got to find baking soda. So I start looking around, trying to find baking soda. Can't find the baking soda. So I finally give up because I can't find the components. That connects back to a phone call that we received a month or so ago from a bank president. A bank president calls and says, how much am I going to make next month? All I do is I ask my accounting people, how much are we going to make next month? And they go, well, I don't know. And so I start asking around people, how much are we going to make next month? And no one seems to know. And so we had the opportunity to come in and help ask some questions for this bank president. And we said to secondary marketing, do you know how much volume you're going to close next month? And they go, oh, yeah. And we said, do you know what your margins are going to be? And they go, yeah, we got a good idea. And I said, so go to accounting. I said, do you have a tool where you can model what you think the results are going to be based on volume and margin as an input? It goes, oh, yeah, we can do that. And so we said, well, here's what we got to do, guys. We got to take this stuff, like the flour and the baking soda, we got to put it into the pot. We got to take this accounting model and put that in the pot, and we shake it all together, and out comes the cake. Out comes the report the president had been looking for and couldn't get because they weren't able to orchestrate the pieces themselves. And
yeah, the data's often, the data's everywhere there. Just bring it together.
Exactly, Dave. There's almost too much data. But we got all these numbers, all these reports, all this information, and all the president wanted to know was, best guess, what are we going to make this month? How much are we going to make next month? What's our profit going to be? You know, it's June the 2nd. What are we going to make for June? And, you know, it was within a range of expected outcomes, but still no one could give him an answer because they couldn't put the pieces together. And that's what companies are going to have. They're going to have someone who can orchestrate results and orchestrate understanding. And some of that dovetails nicely into what Renee's going to talk about in getting buy-in and getting understanding and getting cooperation, because you got to have that or you're not going to be successful. You can have all this cool technology, all these compliance rules fully implemented, and we'll go out of business as fast as we can because we can't make any money because we're not doing it efficiently. We've got to orchestrate all these pieces together now to drive efficiencies and drive profitabilities, and that's with, I mean, we do that. We have a CIO to go and a CFO to go, and Dave, you help people develop production and efficiency strategies. Now we got Renee talking about the tools that he can bring. There's resources out there for people to get on board to do this well, but we're going to have to do it. We're going to have to coalesce. We're going to have a strategy to convert what seems to be chaos into order, and that order being reports and dashboard reports and ways for management to understand the business, to make key decisions quickly and accurately the first time, every time. Just like when we make a loan, we want to do it perfectly the first time, every time. Same thing applies to management decisions. Got to have the right tools, got to have the information coalesced in a form that can be used to make an effective decision. And in this case, the president just wanted to know, where's the flour? How much are we going to make next month? So I understand his frustration.
And
they couldn't produce it. Well, they can now because we came in and taught them how. But they couldn't, and so you got to have this orchestration happening.
On the surface, Andy, you'd think that's so simple. And it's amazing as we're going around, listeners, and consulting to companies across the country, it's not that people are struggling with the difficult stuff. They're struggling with what should be the easy stuff. And if you would like some help on that, you got to get a hold of Andy Schell. He can be reached at 512-501-2811. You can reach Andy there.
No, 2812. You're
2812. It is
2812.
That's right. I got that wrong. Sorry about that. Or Andy at mortgagebankingsolutions.com or Mandy at mbs-team.com. So appreciate you, Prof. Doctor.
Thank you.
And I can't wait to get your old friend on here next. Renee Rodriguez coming up right after the break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with you.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you with us, and we're excited to have Renee Rodriguez coming to you live from Minneapolis. And I had the privilege of meeting Renee at Mastermind 2013, and which was in Las Vegas here recently. And what a pleasure to have him join us from, I believe it's Minneapolis, Minnesota. Renee, good to have you with us. You're on the broadcast.
Great. Great to be on the show. Thanks, guys.
Good. Good to have you here with us. And Renee, many know you well. You're a public speaker. You're out there consulting to many aspects, to many industries, not just certainly not to the mortgage industry. And you have got quite a message. And the Prophet Doctor, I'm going to get him in here just to kind of also give you a little background. Because you and the Prophet Doctor, your paths crossed a number of years ago back when Andy was, the Prophet Doctor was the CFO at a company in Reno. Andy?
Yes, yes. Well, Ray and I had the opportunity to have our paths cross years ago. And at the time, Renee was running an organization that really led to bringing operational efficiency through enhanced communication. It was called Rapid Change. And Renee is just, he's over-the-top brilliant. He sees things before they happen, and he has a way of communicating things in a way that people can understand. So it's just, he's a good friend. I'm glad to have him on the show today, and he's just got a wealth of information to communicate to people.
Not to mention you both are drummers. He's a bongo drummer, and you're just an amazing drummer. Both, I guess, are amazing. I can't wait to watch the two of you in a band. So we got to pull a band together. We've got Alice performing in the background. Joe and I will be on the kazoos somewhere behind the curtain where no one can hear us. So anyway, let's get started off on this. Renee, again, appreciate you being here with us. Everything you talk about is supported by brain research. Tell us a little bit about that. When you and I were in Las Vegas, we were talking about that, and the wealth of information and the research you have is astounding.
You know what's fascinating is that when I was young, my mother looked at me and she said, Renee, I want you to look around this room and I want you to ask yourself, what is it that every single person here has in common, whether they speak English, Spanish, whatever language, whatever country they come from, whatever background they have, whether they have a PhD, never been to school. And at that time, I didn't know, and she made it very clear. She said, Renee, they all have a brain, and if you understand how that works, everything becomes a lot easier. And so that got me started. I'm really taking a look at what do we know about how the brain functions. But more important, my passion was, is how do you take that research and put it into practice in the business world? And so for the last 17 years, that's really what we've been doing, is taking that research and applying it to specific business problems, whether it be in leadership, sales, or the influence and communication and the realm of other different pieces, even technology adoption.
Wow. Well, Renee, again, it's great to have you on the show. And when you were, before you were with the company Rapid Change, which is a unique name, and now you're with, you formed another company that's got a unique name, Valentum. So it's a cool name, and I'm interested to tell us a little bit more about where that came from and what it means.
Well, when you look at, you know, change is something I think that, you know, even on the show we've talked about the Fed funds rate going up, you know, the concept of going to e-recordings versus the traditional methodologies and, you know, orchestrating data that's already available. All of that requires new behavior. All of that requires a new way of thinking, a new way of looking at old issues. And our brains, our bodies, everything is designed to resist change. It's designed to resist innovation. In fact, innovation is one of the biggest buzzwords right now. But really, innovation is just about new thinking and change. And so when we look at how that brain functions, we really take a specific look at what part of the brain is it that causes resistance. I don't care if you know, you're looking to grow sales in a company. What that really means is you're looking to change the behavior of your salespeople. They need to make more sales calls. It's not any more complex than that. And then when they start making more sales calls, then we have to increase the quality of those sales calls. And, of course, all of that requires change, new behavior, and a lot of that change, you know, people are scared of it. They resist it. And so Volentum stands for, it's a combination of two words, voluntary momentum. Now, we can go through, because maybe I'm your sales manager or the CEO, and I can tell you through the power of my title that you need to do things. But research shows that most people resist and the levels of engagement are low. But when a leader can inspire somebody, I'm not talking about motivate. I'm talking about true inspiration. When that voluntary energy of that we have that we can focus on doing X or Y or Z, when that voluntary energy moves towards an idea, that's when things really, really take form. And so Volentum is a combination of the science and the practice of how do you create voluntary momentum towards an idea. And so that we apply that in all sorts of areas, which I'm sure we're going to get into here today. But there's all sorts of applications that really give me fun to talk about.
Joe is on the phone, and I want to toss the mic over to him.
Renee, thanks. I was muted. Sorry. Yeah, we have an industry full of sales professionals that way different ends of the spectrum as far as success and volumes and all that goes. Some are order takers, some are really professionals. How do you define the difference, and how do you, you know, move them on that spectrum from order taker to professional?
That's a great question, Joe. You know, I define an order taker as somebody who facilitates a transaction that would have happened anyways. And so the very similar comparison would be a vending machine. A vending machine sits there, has a product to offer, but doesn't ask for the sale, doesn't contribute any value, doesn't make a presentation. It sits there. When the person is ready, they will walk up to the machine and buy. And unfortunately, the interest rate market over the last several years and the refi booms has really forced a lot of people in the mortgage industry to become order takers. They really need to figure out how do they capture more of these deals that are going to be happening. They're just, how are they going to happen with them? And so the sales professional is somebody who uncovers value that's not seen through presentation, through discovery, through questions. And so when I look at, you know, as interest rates go up and if they are going to go up, to me, everything that I talk about, we try to make it rate, what's the word? So it doesn't matter what the interest rate is, because no matter what the rate is, people are going to be buying something. The question is, are they going to be buying from you? And the person that can most quickly uncover value that's not seen is the one that's going to make the sale. And so it's a mentality. It's a shift. People really need to take a look at how it is that they approach their business. What kind of activities are they engaging in on a daily basis? And, you know, I'm a big proponent of marketing, but I'm not a proponent of marketing when it's a cop-out to selling. Selling is something that is an activity. It's proactive that people have to get out there and do. And, you know, when it comes to, again, the change, it is a new behavior. It's a very new behavior. And when we get interest rates that are this low and we can make this much money without really truly having to communicate value, it can do wonders to our psyche as sales professionals.
Hi, Renee. It's Alice. You know, so that's really a process, and you're talking about the sales process. Can you talk about your view on how that sales process or why it's so important?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's one of the foremost cornerstones of what our business is. And the first question I ask our clients is, what's your sales process? And you'd be surprised at how many companies don't really have a formalized sales process. And so we begin with a very simple one. And before that, we even want people to understand that there are dependent events that need to happen. Just like if you were in, you know, it's like any sort of manufacturing process or even in processing a mortgage or a loan, they're dependent events, things that have to happen before each other. Same is true in selling. So we start with a very basic process to start with, and we call those the six money-making activities. And these are activities that you do. And so the first one would be prospecting. We have to prospect, and the goal of prospecting would be to generate a lead. That would be the outcome or the commitment objective. So if I'm working a trade show, my objective is to get leads. Now, I have this lead, I have a business card. The question is, what do I do with that? Some people will put it into a marketing system and start marketing to that in hopes that that will turn into some sort of business later on. What we like to teach is, you've got this lead, the next thing you have to do is set an appointment, which would be money-making activity number two. Now, that requires a phone call. Some people have sales call reluctance and what we call telephobia, and they won't pick up the phone, but they will market to them because it's that cop-out. And so prospecting, setting appointments, and the goal, of course, on that call is to get a date, time, and a place, so that then you can now present value. This is where your presentation comes in. I remember I sold cookware for 5 years door-to-door, $2,500 a set, and we had a prospectus. We worked a trade show, generated leads, sat on Sunday, booked appointments, and then we presented value. I had to cook dinner. We had to generate some sort of value proposition to communicate them so we can move on to step number four, which would be closing the deal. Mortgage industry, it's hard to close a deal because there is no definitive close of a process, but we like to look at, you know, wherever our conversion ratios surpass about 80% is where we look at the close. And so we try to move towards application. We try to move towards appraisal fee checks being collected, some sort of commitment being made by the client so that we can continually move the sales process forward. So we've got prospecting, setting appointments, presenting value, closing the deal, and then aftercare, which would be make sure that we deliver on our promises, whether it's communication or questions being asked, answered. And then the last piece would be getting referrals. What's amazing, though, to me is that most people don't have step number three. They do not have a presentation of value to deliver, something that really walks people through their value proposition. And so sequence to me is extremely, extremely important. People get lost on that sequence a lot.
So are you telling me you learned – go ahead, Alice. Go ahead. Finish that follow-up.
Well, I was going to say, like you said, people have fallen into it's just an easy sale. Here's what rates are today, and they haven't had to – really sell like in other industries to get that deal. The deal's just walked in the door.
Absolutely. It's sad for the industry. It's great for people that are making money, you know, because it's, you know, people do get a chance to do this, and I'm all for it. Take advantage of the opportunity, but don't lose sight of who we really are and what we're really there to do. We're there to really uncover value, because when the day comes that things get more competitive, things get a little tighter, the changes start happening, we're going to have quite a shock in front of us. We're going to have to go back to those basic fundamentals of how do I present value.
What's interesting is I hear you talk about this years ago. You learned some of these concepts at the earliest stage of your career, and that's when you were selling pots and pans. Did I hear that right?
Absolutely. 18 years old, best lesson I ever had. I got a chance to ask an executive of a $25 billion company where – if I wanted to be in his shoes when I grew up, what's the one thing that I needed to learn how to do? And he looked at me straight in the eye and he said, Renee, you learn how to sell. If you learn how to sell, you will always be employed. Best advice.
You'll always be employed. Yeah, that's great advice. What's interesting is I, too, was when in college, you know, how you're looking for the summer job, and you're looking to do something. Encyclopedias, pots and pans, and what I was, a vacuum cleaner or something like that. I responded, that's what they had. I ended up driving a truck because I thought it would be just a lot cooler, and I think I may have missed it. I should have gone and taken one of those and gotten some sales training skills. But that's really interesting that how you do that. Another thing, how you learned that at the early age doing those things, and you sit and think about it. If you're selling something like a pot and pan or a vacuum cleaner or whatever it is, you know, the Fuller Brush Guide, there is very, very disciplined processes that they've developed and something to be not scoffed at. You mentioned something earlier when you were talking that caught my ear, inspired leadership versus motivated or motivational type leadership. Expound on that a little bit.
Great question. So, I mean, there's a big difference between inspiration and motivation. And, you know, motivation is something when we look at, we've all been there, we've been to a seminar or listened to a speaker, and we come out so motivated. But what happens in the brain, yeah, is a lot of times when we hear those talks is that a lot of adrenaline is pumping through our brains, and there's a chemical going on inside of us that cannot last too long in us. So it has to go away at some point. And so there's an emotional response to what's going on. And we have to move into something that lasts a lot longer, and that would be inspiration. Inspiration is specifically an attachment to the part of our brain that looks forward into the future and has a very strong connection to our, what's called our limbic system, which houses our value center. So if you look at
our limbic, did you say limbic?
Limbic.
Our limbic center?
Yep. Yep, okay. Limbic system. And if you look at, you know, when we volunteer our time, people that work for Habitat for Humanity or they go and Big Brothers, Big Sisters, you know, I'll ask the question, great, you did that. How much did you get paid? And they laugh at me like, I didn't get paid. I'm like, well, why would you do that? Well, it feels good. They give me all sorts of reasons why. And really what they're saying, what they're explaining is that they're tying their actions into a very strong connection to their values. And so when we look at that, when we pay people to come to work, you know, we're saying, here's an exchange. I will, in essence, what we call these manipulators. Anytime we lower price, that's a manipulator. I'm going to lower my price to get you to buy. Anytime I offer promotion, 2-for-1, I'm using a marketing manipulator to buy. If I pay you to come into work, you know, there's in essence, I'm manipulating you to come to work for me. And so that's why we say that the more money doesn't motivate people more. It doesn't engage them more. Money doesn't do that. It does wear off. But true inspiration does. When people feel like they can live their values through their work, money is
so
definitely important, but it's a different thing. And what we're really talking about then is what we call engagement. And engagement, employee engagement, is when we now give the company discretionary effort and time. Because you're going to pay me for my time to get there and do a job. But when I'm at home or if I'm up late or if I'm sitting in my bed and I can't think, you don't have that time. You're not entitled as my employer to that time. But if I'm engaged in the business, guess what? You got that time. You have the innovative ideas that come to solutions that come to the surface.
So talk about leadership. I mean, one of the most important jobs as a leader is then to inspire. I mean, how would you characterize that? How would you fit it into the leadership role?
It comes into the and I work with executive CEOs of billion-dollar organizations, of small companies to people in all sorts of industries. And the most fascinating thing that I've come to realize is that most leaders don't understand their number one task, and their number one task is influence. My job or your job or anyone's job as a leader is to influence behavior and thinking. And if I'm up there and I'm talking, because I'm given a certain level of power by having a title,
right?
But I'm not given the full ability to influence by my title. People, that's a privilege. That's something that has to be earned. And the good news is that influence, there's a science behind it. There are certain ways that I can do things that will inspire people and influence them to do something. And there's certain ways that if I do them the other way, that it will completely turn them off and push them away. And so what we talk about is we spend the first 2.5 hours sometimes in our sessions talking about influence as being the number one task, and you watch the light bulbs go off to say, because I'll ask them, I said, great, what if you gave a great talk, you ran a meeting, you did your strategy session, and everybody walked out of it and said, wow, that was an amazing meeting, that was an amazing speech, but they made no change as a result of it. Did you
right.
do your job? They didn't.
That's it.
I said, so no matter what's going on, I'm sorry, is it the last piece? Is it no matter what's going on, they have to influence behavior.
That's so fascinating. Steve Wiley at the Lincoln Leadership Institute in Gettysburg teaches on that. And he talks about the difference between transactional leadership styles and transformational leadership styles, two terms that really just strikes your thinking as a leader. So give us some little insights into leadership versus management.
Well, you know, one of the things that when it comes to the mortgage industry is that I've also seen as a big missing piece is that we are missing true sales management. And this goes back to what Andy, the Profit Doctor, was talking about, is that, you know, somebody that can orchestrate data into meaningful decisions. And so when we look at, let's combine some of these pieces here before. So leader, to me, is the person that's out there influencing behavior, setting a vision and a direction, and giving people that connection as to why they come to work. And we'll remind me to talk about the question why in a minute here. And so the manager, though, is a very different skill set. What I've seen in the mortgage industry is that a lot of promotions happen through great production. People become great salespeople. They make a lot of money, and they're doing fantastic. They've implemented systems, and they're really doing all this great stuff, but they've never been taught how to manage. And management, when it comes to sales management, I'll give you
– so true.
To me, it comes down to – to me, it comes down to managing metrics that cause good change. And so there are metrics that can cause positive change, and there are certain metrics that cause no change at all. And I'll give you an example. Let's say if you were to go to the doctor's going to take a metric on you. And they say, David, you know, they're going to take your blood pressure. And if they said to you, David, you know what? Your blood pressure is a little bit high. Would you lower it, please? What would be your response?
The how.
Okay. How do I do it, right? You wouldn't have the response of, oh, my gosh, it's supposed to be lower? I had no idea. Let me fix that right now.
Yeah,
you wouldn't have that response.
Yeah.
And so you, it's a great metric to tell you if you're alive, dead, sick, or healthy, but it does not help you cause change because you can't change that directly. So what's the difference between the sales manager, the salesperson comes in and says, wow, sales are low. Go sell more. Salesperson's not going to say, sell more? I had no – that is great advice.
Uh-huh.
Thank you so
like,
much.
Yeah.
Let me get right on that. You know, it's
so
not
true.
That. And so what we go to is those are metrics that do not cause change. And so here, let me give you an example. If you go to the Mayo Clinic and you were to get your blood pressure taken, the doctor would say, well, you know, David, your blood pressure is a little bit low. Not a problem. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to follow this three-step process. I want you to breathe in for 3 seconds, first metric, and then breathe out for 4. And, David, I want you to make sure that you get that fourth second. So breathe in, 1, 2, 3, breathe out 4. Let's practice one time. And he'd take the metric, and he'll say, wow, David, that was 2 in and 2 out. I need you to go 3 in and 4 out. Now, that metric, can you make a change?
Interesting. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Absolutely, because I gave the metric based on something you can control. And so the question comes back into what is the breathing of selling? What's that metric that when sales are low, I can go back to that one metric, I can control it within a minute or to 5 minutes of my time to start increasing the right activities. And so sales management is that individual who takes the time to understand what the goals of that loan officer, that sales professional are, tie those goals to the strategic plan of the business, and then create the metrics around to care enough to hold that person accountable to those metrics and remind them as to why they did this. To go beyond just the company needs.
Yeah. That is just so fascinating, Renee, as we start talking about that. And I look at some – Andy, you're the metric guy. I mean, this has got to be I'd love to get you your perspective on all this.
Well, I mean, it's so exciting to sit here listening to Renee. I've as we talked about, we worked together before in the past, and he's so both inspiring and insightful to hear all this. I mean, I'm one of his biggest cheerleaders because this is yes, absolutely perfect. Yeah, let's figure out how to do this. Let's make it happen, Captain. Let's head down the path and figure this out. I think it's great.
Well, Andy, we said talk about there's companies like Motivity that has great metrics and measurings, but it's how to lead people to the point where they affect change. And that leadership versus management was that's good stuff. Anyway, back to you, Andy.
Well, let me hit this next thought then, the next point about Renee. I remember the stories of Renee meeting with senior executives, top executives, CEOs of Fortune 100 companies. I can't remember exactly. I think Coca-Cola was one of them. So he's met with and dealt with and worked with CEOs for a long time. And big, you know, senior executives.
Yeah, some of the biggest
big
corporations out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the biggest companies in the world have used some of Renee's tools. And he talks about influence as his main focus. So, Renee, if you would explain a little bit more, why is influence such a key focus and in fact your main focus?
Well, it goes back to some of the things I said before, but what I've found is that leaders, and let's even define this even first of all, I had a great conversation with Ken Blanchard one time as an interview that we did together, and I had asked him the difference between leadership and management, and he said, first of all, I believe a leader is anybody who influences behavior. And so in essence, we really all influence behavior, which by definition then we're all leaders. And so I would challenge anybody to think and to really take to this point that all of our jobs, if we're parents, it's to influence better eating, to influence our kids to brush their teeth, to go to bed on time, to not use drugs and alcohol. If we're teachers, it's to influence our kids to want to stay engaged. I mean, any industry, anything you do, that is our job. And so when I go back to influence, the biggest missing piece that I see leaders miss is their moments of influence. And this goes back into anytime they're in the hallway. If they walk by the wrong person, if they shake the hand in a hand and accidentally look away for a split second as they shake that hand, the message that's just a split second, the influence that happened there in the wrong direction, or when they're running a meeting, you know, I mean, there's a reason why they call it death by meeting, the book Death by Meeting, because meetings and organizations are killing people because people don't realize that is the single biggest opportunity to influence a company as to how meetings are run. Phone calls, conference calls, presentations, blogs, whatever, all these are opportunities to influence. And the challenge is People don't see that. They see those public speaking skills, which is one of the biggest mistakes. Public speaking skills and training typically focus on getting people over, the fear of speaking. And to me, I've seen a lot of people not scared and perfectly comfortable standing in front of the room, boring us out of our minds. And so the question is how do we influence? And so I'd rather have somebody, and I've seen some people that are nervous, shaking in their boots, but, man, they are influencing because it's so authentic. And so when I work with people, it really comes back to that question of authenticity is one of the strongest influencers, but then adding in the science, the sequence of how we talk about things. And instead of starting with what, we begin with why. The why speaks directly to the part of our brain that drives behavior. It drives behavior. If we speak to that first, then all of a sudden we see all sorts of actions come across. And I'll give you one example. Simon Sinek wrote a great book called Start With Why, and so I very highly recommend the book. And he gives one of the best articulations of this. And I've been talking about the why since 2001 probably, but I still think this is my favorite. And he says, why is it that companies like Apple are able to consistently out-innovate their competitors year after year, and they're just a computer company like Dell and Gateway? Why is it that Harley-Davidson is able to get people to put a permanently implanted tattoo of their logo onto their body? It's the number one tattoo in the world. I've never seen a Honda tattoo. Why is it that Southwest Airlines is able to get a cult-like following where, people don't follow other airlines that way? And it comes down to those companies lead, act, communicate, and behave in a very specific sequence, and it's completely the opposite of how everybody else does it. So I'll give you an example. When we look at Dell has a very specific message, and they begin, and the concept comes back to is that we talk about who or what we do, how we do it, and very few companies talk about why they do what they do. Everybody knows what they do. I'm an originator. This is what I do. Or I'm a leader. I'm a father. The good companies and the good people know how they do it well. So this is the how part of it. This is in what we've been taught is if we tell people what it is that we do with a unique enough how, then with a unique enough how, then people will expect some sort of behavior. Here's what I do. Here's how I do it. Buy from me. Here's what I do. Here's how I do it. Vote for me. Here's what I do. Here's how I do it. Come work for me. But Dell would communicate that same message, would say, starting with a what, moving into the how, and maybe touch on a why. And they would say, something like, we're a great computer company. And how we do that is through making products that are custom designed to you at an affordable price, delivered to your door. Do you want to buy one? I don't know. It's not real inspiring. If I'm a real estate agent, they may say something like, I'm a great real estate agent. I believe in my clients and do great customer service. You want to list your home with me? I'm a great loan officer. I offer the best interest rates and awesome product knowledge. Do you want to work with me? But now what happens, look how Apple communicates, and I'll close this point out with this. Apple communicates the opposite. They begin with why, and they move their way out. Apple says, and I want you to feel the difference, we believe in pushing the bounds of the status quo in everything that we do. We do that by making products that are beautifully designed, easy to use, and user-friendly. We happen to be a computer company. Do you want to buy one?
Yeah.
Very different message.
Yeah. Very different.
Renee, this is Joe. How do you pull that around to the originator specifically, the influence and the process?
Very, very easy. At the moment an originator starts talking about rate, they have commoditized what they're doing. And I know they've heard this 100,000 times, but now it's time that we act on it. And so what we talk about in my sessions, what I'll do, and in fact, I think, David, I sent you the link. I'm doing a webinar tomorrow to be talking more about this. But the what we tell people is to understand, I'll ask an originator, and I'll say, hey, so what is it that you do? Well, I'm a mortgage banker. And I'll give you an example of one person that said this. And I said, great, what makes you unique? And he said, I like to educate my clients. And I said, great. For we got 1,000 people in the room. I said, no pressure. Why, of all the things you chose, did you choose to educate your clients? Because let's look around the room. How many people like to educate their clients? And 1,000 hands went up. And he gets sad and depressed. I go, you didn't differentiate, did you? He said, no. I said, but look, you did something more powerful. You related to 1,000 people. Now let's look at how we can use that. And so I said, why is it that you chose education? To make my very long story short, it took him a couple minutes, and it finally clicked on him. And he said, you know what? My parents, I'm Jewish, and I grew up in a very Jewish family, and education was the most important thing to me. And I never was any good in school, and I was going to drop out. I tried telling my father about it, and he wouldn't have anything to do with it. And so finally, I said, that's all I needed to do. And I turned his story around, and I said, here's your new story. somebody asks you what you do, and you tell them this story. You know, so what is it you do? And he says, well, you know, my family's Jewish, and education is a very important thing to me. And my father, I was going to drop out of school because I wasn't very good at it, but my father wouldn't let me, and he made me stay in school. And I watched my friends that fell out of school. I watched other people that didn't get a chance to do this make very poor decisions, and I've watched it affect their life. And I made a decision that no matter what industry I was going to be a part of, I wanted to educate people and give them the knowledge to make the right decisions. So I decided to get into the mortgage finance industry. So I happened to be a mortgage banker. And that was
that
one of the most powerful things that happened.
We are at the close, Renee. We've got to have you back. You're just touching on all kinds of interesting information. Folks, we've had Renee Rodriguez, President CEO of Valentum, with us. We're so excited to have him. Tune in next week. We look forward to having you back. Appreciate you, Renee, for being a part of the broadcast. Have a great week, everybody.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.